Taking Stock. So glad to have everyone here. March 13th. I'm joined by 6 days by Whose House to talk about some incredible research that they've been doing into recurring purchases or direct stock purchases, I should say, of any kind through the computer share plan process. It's got some great graph data here. You'll be able to find those images that they've been created in the Nest or in the show notes. So thanks so much, 6 days, for coming in.
Awesome. Thank you for having me. I'd been wanting to cover this topic for a while. So today, is a good day to do it. I've outlined a little bit of what I want to talk about. The first thing that I want to cover, and most people know, is that DRS is a two-step process. So whether you buy through the broker or the transfer agent, your shares are not DRS until you do the one more step, and that is to transfer your shares from a nominee name into your own name. So, for me personally, I actually do have two computer share accounts. I have one account that is 100%, pure DRS book, what we've been calling DRS form. And so those shares are completely in my name. That is, I would say, 99% of my shares at all times. And then I do have another account that is set up for recurring purchases, mainly just to gather the data that I'm about to go through with you, because it is something that I haven't really seen tracked. I don't think a lot of people know about it. I don't think that, it's not super obvious that it can be tracked. And also, we're missing a little bit of information. So hopefully this would spark somebody's interest that would maybe, get interested and maybe reach out and we could collaborate. So I know Whose House and I did a lot of work on a lot of different issuers, trying to really figure out who, which issuers have the most direct buys or recurring buys. And so we'll get into that in a little bit. Going back to my second account, the reason that I have two accounts, and I wish more people knew about this, is if you have, in order to do a purchase through ComputerShare, you have to enroll your account in the direct stock plan. And so there's been a lot of discussion about that. But if, I have all of my shares in one account and I went to do a purchase, it would, it would take my shares out of the DRS form for that account. So I do have two accounts, but most of my buying is directly through Fidelity. I think that Fidelity is the fastest way to DRS. It's been the most convenient. I'll just leave that there. So let me see. We did talk a little bit about shares purchased through the transfer agent are not DRS, and we have covered that a lot in the past as far as the SEC and FINRA bulletins that came out and said that if you buy shares through the transfer agent, through a transfer agent plan, that they're not DRS, that you have to move them. So there has been a lot of discussion around that. I believe that was July of last year when both the SEC and FINRA released bulletins, I believe on the same day or around the same week. So I did want to verify that. Let me see. Okay. So these purchases, I started, my first purchase was in, I would say, early 22. And then I started to get more involved with it as more people had started to buy directly through ComputerShare in late 22. And it just seemed like, you deposit your money and then it's a handful of days, the purchase goes through, and then it's a handful of days and you get a text and it goes into your account. And it didn't seem to be a very consistent pattern. It was very close, but it was always off by a day or two here or there. And so over time, I had really narrowed down the formula to what I was missing was the weekends, which, are pretty obvious. They're not business days. But what was really throwing me off was any holiday was pushing everything back by a day. So what the formula, it's not that complicated. A lot of people still reach out to me and ask me, is today a recurring buy day? You know, but the formula is just a T plus three, excluding the weekends and excluding holidays. So as you guys probably know, for GameStop and really for any direct stock plan, they offer recurring buys twice a month. On the 1st and 15th is when your money goes out. And then 3 days later, excluding weekends and holidays, the purchase actually happens. So I believe the most recent one was March 6th, you know, so you have money goes out on the 1st and actually the shares are purchased on the 6th. And the next one looks like it's going to be March 20th. So your money will go out on the 15th and then the buy will happen on the 20th. And I hadn't actually looked at this, but that is kind of interesting because the 20th it also happens to be the DRS cutoff day, the projected DRS cutoff day. As of yesterday, most people know that GameStop is going to release their earnings on the 26th. And we have realize that the DRS cutoff day is usually 6 days before that, which would leave it, or did I say the 20th? Maybe, yeah, it is the 20th. Let me see, 20. That's right, March 20th. Okay. So the next date is actually on DRS cutoff day. So that's, news for me. Okay. So one thing I want to go through real quick, and this is in the Nest, is the image that has the bank statement on it, you know, which has all those different letters and numbers and all that on there. It has the dates of the transactions. You can see these are actually my transactions from 2022. If going through that, it has the date of the transaction. It has, you know, GameStop Corp, and it has the OD1 or OD2. And so you can see the OD1s, you can see they're all, they go out on the 1st and 15th. So those are the recurring buys. And then the OD2s were probably when I was feeling very excited about GameStop and made one-time purchases on top of my recurring purchases. So we have that. That kind of distinguishes that. And then right next to it is the number that we're really going to be talking about here, and that's the transaction number. And so you can see at the very bottom of there, I've got 76XXX. And at the very top, I've got 101XXX. So those X's I had put those in there because I didn't want anyone to know my exact transaction number for obvious reasons. But so we're looking at between, looks like October 3rd of 22 to March 28th, 23. We went from the number 76,000 all the way up to the number 101,000. So if you subtract those two, it looks like we had 25,000 transactions, computer share transactions during that time. Okay, if you look next to that, then it gives you, it's actually in reverse order. It's got the year, month, and date. So to backing up a little bit, the way that you see these numbers is by logging into your bank. This number does not come in through ComputerShare. So if you want to pull these numbers for yourself, you go into your bank statement and they should pop up. One thing I do want to mention though, before sharing this information, is that right on the right of the year, month, and day, just on the right, it'll actually have your ComputerShare account number. And so you'll want to be careful if you ever screenshot on there, you want to edit it like I did. So, one thing that's I do want to mention about these transaction numbers, these are only for United States transactions. We have talked to some other people, investors that buy internationally, and they are not seeing these same numbers. So if I said there's 25,000 transactions, you know, between those two times, that does not include international investors. And although the numbers do escalate sequentially, we don't know for sure. And we actually believe that just because it's 25,000 transactions, it doesn't only mean 25,000 individual investor purchases. What we believe is that they do bundle some transactions together. And I do, Whose House and I did a test together where we bought a very, very unpopular stock, apparently, and we both got the same transaction number, which, you know, was indicative that they did bundle our purchase together. So I do want to point that out. And that is one of the things that I had mentioned earlier. That's an unknown. And I would like to know more about that. We also don't know, you know, how many shares. We do have some estimates on that, and I'll get into that in a little bit. But okay, so moving on. So what are these, you know, what's happening? This is what a lot of people are asking, you know, are direct buys and recurring buys, are they increasing? Are they stagnant? Are they, you know, they going up a lot? And so I do have, because AMC is the only other issuer that that discloses registered share totals quarterly, I track AMC as well as GameStop, and it's great to compare the two. So the first graph I want to start on is the AMC plan purchase transactions. And so, you know, it looks like here I've got from November 22 all the way to present day. And you can see at one time, it looks like between October of 22 and around February 23, their purchases were pretty strong. And I have estimated it, you know, did the math, and they had about 200 transactions a week. So that'd be, you know, about 800 a month, 200 a week. And now if you can see it, it really, really, really flatlined, especially now we're down to maybe 25 a week. So it looks like, you know, almost whatever that is, 80%, 85% reduction in plan purchase transactions. Okay, so now we can go on to the GameStop graph, which you can see here. It looks like I have the same dates, November 22 all the way to March. And the line, it's going, I wouldn't call it linear, but it is fairly strong. And so back in the beginning of popularity, I believe that GameStop peaked at about 1,000 a week. So I believe the month that the most transaction numbers went up was 4,000 in a month. And now we're at about 1,800 a month. So we went from 1,000 a week to 450 a week. So it is, you know, down 55%, but it has pretty steadily held in that 450 range. So I just find this interesting, you know, if not a lot of people keep track of this, but AMC between their last 10Q and their most recent 10K had increased registered shares by 200,000. So I know, and these are registered shares. They're, you know, they're not DRS until you make them DRS, but they are registered. So they should show up in those totals. And so, you know, the fact that AMC with, 1/20th, the amount of planned purchases as GameStop went up 200,000 shares, you know, could be indicative of, you know, the GameStop numbers should be going up. You know, if people are buying these registered shares, you know, 450 a week, on top of all the other people that are buying through brokers and DRSing, you know, it should be an indicator that numbers should be increasing. At least, you know, that's how I see it. So let me see. Did anyone have any questions about any of those graphs, you know, so far? I've covered a lot of what I wanted to cover.
Well, I'd be happy to cut in just to look for some clarifying information.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So far, I mean, of course, what you've covered is dense, and I really appreciate you bringing these visual resources here, just checking those out. So one question that I have is sort of about, and I know you mentioned these transaction numbers, right? It's not a one-to-one where, you know, if there's a gap of 2,000, that doesn't quite mean 2,000 transactions. You said sometimes people share a transaction number. So I was curious to know, how often does that happen? I mean, is it is it fairly frequent that transaction numbers seem to get duplicated and that would indicate a lot of bundling, or is it more infrequent? And what's the data set that you're pulling from? I see in this image, that's just a small group of your own transactions, but I know you said Hoos has contributed some. Are you getting transaction data from other places as well? Just curious for an idea about the density of the overlap and what kind of density of information you're pulling these assertions from.
Yeah, that's a great question. I used to track it a lot more back in late 22, and I would say that I had 100 or, you know, less than 200 transaction numbers. You know, it's also for people to share their exact transaction number, they have to trust each other maybe more than people that don't know each other. And so I would say early on, I was getting data like I'm getting now where you're missing the last digit or two. And so you don't really know. And so recently it's just been with a handful of people. And I would say that the sample size of transactions would be under 100. And I did see there was a guy in Discord named Salami Slayer, and he was really big into these also. And him and I believe he's the first guy that found a duplicate number. And I was like, wait, what? And so, you know, it kind of just really made me, you know, because we thought it's like computer share account numbers, you know, it's one for one. There's no duplicates. And then when we found a duplicate, we thought maybe there's an error, but, you know, we wanted to keep really looking through this. And so it's really difficult, though. So if you and I have a recurring buy-on for next month and you and I compare numbers, you know, I would say this is just off the top of my head, it could be 90% or 95%, you know, that the numbers are going to be different. It's just we kept always seeing different numbers, and that's why Hoos House and I were really just determined to create a duplicate, you know, to prove that it could be done, to prove that it's not one for one. And so he and I had set up, he had set up more than I did. You know, I still have 5 to 10 issuers on recurring buys and still pull data. But he had set up more than me, and we had compared data, and we didn't have any duplicate numbers except, you know, so what we ended up doing is he had set up a lot more for me, and he realized on one issuer that he had a sequential number from, you know, between buys. So let's just say he had 1,001 and then the next buy he had 1,002. And that led us to believe that if we both set up a recurring buy on that same issuer, that there might be a good chance that we would get the same number. And that's exactly what happened. So it did kind of prove that it's not one for one. You know, I had two different times when it happened, but I would say the size you're talking, maybe 50 to 100 comparisons where it was not the case. So that would be a great thing to know. You know, does it happen 10% of the time? Does it happen 2% of the time? Does it happen, you know, 5% of the time? So I don't know if I kind of answered that question. It's, you know, we do have two different occurrences where we had duplicate transaction numbers, you know, which leads me to believe that they're not one-to-one. And, you know, other than that, I don't know how often it happens. I would guess less than 10% of the time, but that's just kind of a educated guess.
Gotcha. Okay. Thanks a lot for the detail there. Do you have any theories about what is causing them? Off the top of the head for me, I'm wondering if it has something to do with bundling for lot purchases, trying to get to 100 shares each or something in order to better effectuate, you know, trading on market through their broker partner. But I'm not as familiar with it. Do you have any theories about why some seem to be bundled in that way and why some don't?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I did want to mention, you know, someone who's not here, who he and I had talked a lot, mainly in Reddit DM. There is a Reddit user, and I think he's on Twitter. His name is The Ultimator 5. And he and I had shared information. We've had some disagreements, but more agreements and disagreements. But he What he was saying is that they're he believes that they're batched, you know, maybe like what you're saying, maybe they're trying to hit batches of 100, you know, per transaction number. That's really the only, you know, theory, I guess, that I would say is out there is, you know, if I have a $10 purchase and you have a $25 purchase, you know, should they do two transactions or should they bundle them as one? To me, it seems kind of, I feel like it's kind of odd because it, you know, when you're looking at your bill, you know, your bank statement, I would think that they would want them to be separate, but, you know, one for one, but, you know, maybe they kind of distinguish that with your account number, which is also on there. So, that's the only theory that I've got is that they bundle them into bigger groups when they do the buys.
Okay. I gotcha. Yeah. I wonder how we could end up finding that out, but if that's the main theory that's out there, then, you know, and there's no competing theories at the moment, then, you know, and it would make sense, I suppose, for that to be the case in anyways. Everything is being kept together in bulk when handling through the nominee for the sake of plan. And so it makes some sense to have things bundled and then distributed out in the way down the line, at least for, you know, in an Occam's razor sort of way.
Yeah. And I would, you know, I believe what's happening is that, you know, each purchase that's going through, it's not just one giant candle. And so the way that GameStop, I'm sorry, the way that ComputerShare charges you is based on, I believe they aggregate all the purchases, however many there are, however they do it, and they give you the average, you know, for the purchase. So if they had bought shares between 1450 and 15, they charge everybody 1475. And so I don't know if that kind of leads into why that might happen, but it's apparent that it's not just one giant buy. And so, you know, that's, it means that there's multiple buys, you know, just from there. And so, if we know that there's at least a few big buys, then it could mean that there's a bunch of smaller buys as well.
Well, and that would also lead into why there were so many individual transaction numbers. If they're doing them in buys of 100, but they're buying, you know, tens of thousands of these either recurring or individual plan purchases on major market days, then, you know, that could explain the quick and small jagged candle movement happening during those times. And I know that the Ultimator 5 user, I'll see about posting a link to his profile because he does do some good ancillary work on this, predicting the time of day, like 10:45 or whatever, that these are going to hit the ticker, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I would, anybody that's interested in these, you know, I would recommend following him, keeping up with him. He does post, I believe, on Super Stonk, maybe even the night before. He posts before the purchase is going to happen, telling people when it's going to happen. And then he posts a follow-up after. And he does that every single recurring buy. So he does give some great data. He does give some great insight. And I had reached out to him yesterday through DM about a question. But, you know, we have shared information in the past. And for anybody that's interested in what's going on with these, I would highly recommend checking out his, you know, the way that he tracks these purchases.
Great. Yeah, the more information out there, the better. Yeah, just threw a link to his post history in the Nest for anyone who wants to check that out as well.
Okay. And, you know, I wanted to move on now to the fees. You know, I'm kind of going down a little bit. I've got a screenshot, should be in the Nest. It has the GameStop logo, shows direct stock plan, has the minimum investment and all there. So I don't know if, you know, I think a lot of these purchases, people kind of do a set it and forget it type of thing. But really, if you look through here and see what's getting charged. So, you know, I think that I'm not a big fan of the small amounts that they allow people to get in. And I'll show you that in the next graph, because there is a minimum fee. You know, anytime you do a purchase for recurring, they take $2.50. So if you do a $10 recurring purchase, that's $2.50 right there, which is a 25% commission or fee or whatever you want to call it. And so it really will gobble up your money. And I kind of went on the smaller, I really just tracked the cost of recurring, which is in that next like negative parabola or whatever you want to call it. But the way that it works is if you do a recurring purchase, they take $2.50 and then they take $5.05 a share. And so right now, if you have, and they round up. So if you do a $25 buy right now, and GameStop's at $15, they're going to take $2.50, but they're going to take 5 cents times two because they round up. So they'll take $2.60 on a purchase of $25, and you would end up getting, you know, one point whatever shares. So they do, you know, you can look through that. They have very small minimums. And the problem with small minimums, we can move on to that graph, is that they, if you look at it percentage wise, the fees are very high. So looking at the graph with that red line on it, titled percentage fees for computer share purchases for GameStop at $15. You know, I took the minimum, which was $10, you know, so $10, I just said earlier, you know, you're going to get charged. It's going to be near 26%. You know, it's going to be $2.55, I guess. And then as you do higher and higher buy, it's going to be such a, you know, much smaller percentage. So if you do a $300 recurring purchase, I think it's going to cost you like $4, you know, which is 1%. So, you know, although it is $4, it's only 1%. As opposed to if you do a $10 purchase, you know, it's $2.55, which is, you know, almost 26%. So in my opinion, just to be in line, if someone is going to be doing recurring purchases or even we'll start with recurring purchases. I would recommend if anybody's going to do recurring purchases that they do not go do them for smaller than $100 or maybe $150, really to stay in line with maybe 3%. You know, 3% is kind of a standard transaction fee for a credit card or something like that. So if you do $150 purchase, it's, they're going to take, you know, 2 or 3%, which although it's, you know, it's still more than at a broker, at least it's not eating up all your money like it would do if you have the $10 or $25 purchases. So I didn't have this same graph on here, and now it just kind of occurred to me, you know, if you do one-time investments, you know, they're going to take $5. And so it looks like the one-time investment, if you already have an account, you're an existing shareholder, you can do a $10 one-time buy. Well, they're going to take $5. That's, you know, that's 50% fee right there. So again, I would say if you're going to do a one-time buy, you would want that number to be even higher to get your percentage down. So that's just, you know, something that I want to point out. It often gets skipped. You know, a lot of people are focusing on lit market and those type of things. But, you know, really, you don't want to get your money eaten up in fees, in my opinion. Leads me into, you know, another thing is about the lit market and those, you know, there is conflicting information on ComputerShare's website. I believe in the FAQ, they say, you know, that the transactions will, they don't call it lit market, but they say that they're going to go through the market. But then in the direct stock plan, there, it says that they can be negotiated on the side. So there's a little bit of conflicting information. Hopefully we can get some clarity from ComputerShare, but I know that is one of the reasons why some people like these buys is because they feel like it positively affects price, you know, more than maybe a broker buy. Until we get, you know, complete clarity from ComputerShare, you know, there is some conflicting information.
Yeah, and it's certainly hard to know, right? I mean, we can see, thanks to the effort of folks like you and Hoos and Salami and Ultimator, that, you know, we can see influence on the ticker, you know, during these periods of time where the recurring buys are landing. But conversely, you know, there's no way to track buys through the traditional broker system, you know, more directly, and they could be happening at any market time. And so we really have no comprehension of whether or not those are or aren't landing on the ticker. Of course, there's major concerns about, you know, dark pools and things like that. We just don't know. So it's one of these sort of things, it sounds like, where we've got an indication of impact on one side and not as much, you know, just a guess on the other side. And that might be why people are more excited, because there's something that they can actually point to.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one thing that really got me excited in the beginning. It was because, you know, it was kind of like a hype day every 2 weeks, which I like hype days. I think they're fun. It's something you can track. I love information you could track. I love looking for patterns. And so, you know, it kind of had everything that I was looking for. And so I still do track it, but I had, you know, I had realized what it was doing to my account. And so I had mostly stopped and continued to buy through Fidelity, but I still track it. You know, I still do have one account with some small transactions, just because I do like tracking this. And I think that there is value here. So, you know, to back up your point, sometimes it seems like when we see positive movement in stock price or negative movement, and there is something like news happening or anything else, a lot of people will say, well, we know this because this. And I think what most of us here, and probably anyone that's going to be listening to this, is that we don't know. You know, when I think back a year ago when the news came out and said, if, you know, GameStop goes over 30, it's going to go parabolic or something. And then the price went up, that we knew that, you know, it was probably the price was going to go up, and they were using the news article to explain it. And so I do believe that these purchases are impacting price, at least some of the time, and maybe most of the time. But I wouldn't say that we know for sure, you know, especially because the default that I would go to is what's written in the direct stock plan, because that's kind of, you know, the legal document that you're agreeing to when you are agreeing to buy this way. And so whatever is on a FAQ, to me, you know, might not be taken. You know, ComputerShare has a lot of different plans, and there are plans. Their FAQ is trying to kind of explain all the different plans, not just direct stock plan. And we always talk about direct stock plans. So I just, again, we don't know. I do think that they affect price, but again, we don't know. And there is what's written in the direct stock plan would allow them to not have them hit the market.
Right here. I want to, what I'll do real quick. I know Hoops, you have your hand up, and we've got Thomas who requested a speaker role. I'll get you guys up here in just a second to cap that conversation. I will just quote the part of the direct stock plan you're talking about.
Absolutely.
Section 5, purchase and sale transactions. They say, you know, ComputerShare will cause its broker to affect purchases and sales on any securities exchange where such shares are traded in the over-the-counter market or by negotiated transactions. And so that's the first sentence under the section. And they're just saying that they can use the regular exchanges, they can use over-the-counter markets or those negotiated transactions, which provide for pretty much all manners of trade available to them. So they're just giving themselves as much flexibility as the language will allow. And I think that's the language that you're highlighting when people are making an assumption about the impact on the lit market, even though we do have the data from the recurring buys every other week in real time. So definitely worth pointing out. Here, Hoos, you go ahead, and Thomas, I'll get you up here as well.
Good afternoon, boys. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, thanks for having me. I had a couple of notes that I thought were noteworthy for U6 days. Just in general, first of all, in Chives, great questions early on, right? I'm barely just getting here. So there's a guy on Reddit who posts, he was buying like $1,000 of through computer share a day, every day for like 30 days straight. I would say this was in the last 90 days. I think his name is WRF DW. He would also give away a bunch of money. This guy's super cool, bro. One of my favorite Reddit users, actually. And he would post the transaction number on there, actually, I think every single day. So you could even track it sequentially. So if you weren't familiar with that 6 days, I would go look at that guy's thread or just his personal page. And then also, Ultimator, that guy does great work. And I wish he would actually join us in the DRS GME Discord, because I think there's a lot of, a lot of collaboration or a lot of interesting overlay that we could discuss and work together, since 6 days, myself, a handful of others are working on it. And then the last point I had was I love the fee thing you laid out, 6 days, because I hate seeing people lose money or like it's such a hard game to beat investing. Like, we're all investing to make money. And if you put yourself in a hole, and sometimes I see or hear people buying like over the counter, whatever different type of stocks where like sometimes there's even like a $50 fee and they're buying 50 or 100 bucks. And it's just like, dude, like, how do you ever get ahead this way? It's almost impossible. So I'm glad you pointed that out. What I would recommend doing is making a exiting one, because if you ever sell a fractional share for GME, for example, the minimum fee is $25. And so any fractional is pretty much going to be gone. If you sell a company which has larger than $25 on a fractional share, of course, they'll take $25. If you have less than, they just eat the difference of the fee. So you don't have to come out of pocket. They don't sell additional shares or anything like that. But I would look at that fee schedule on the way out too, because that's pretty hefty for the small buys. Right, a $25 fee on the way out. I would break that down too. Those are all the notes I had for you guys, though. Great talk.
Awesome, man. I thank you so much for following up with those things. I do. I'm not subscribed to Superstonks, so when I don't spend as much time on Reddit. I'm mainly on Twitter and Discord, but I do kind of remember seeing that guy's transactions. I try to thumbs up any type of purple circle posts and things like that. So I do remember seeing his posts. I'll definitely look into it and reach out to him, and maybe he can fill in some of the missing pieces that I've got. I guess, now that I'm thinking about it, he must have 5 or 10 different accounts, I would guess, because in order to have a purchase go through every day, what he's doing would probably require a lot of work. Because he's going to have to go through on Monday and hit buy for one account. And then on Tuesday, he's got to go hit buy for another account. And then Wednesday, same thing, and just kind of keep that cycle going. But if he is buying that many shares, it seems like we should see, some type of upward movement in what he's doing. And so I think that that's very interesting. I'm sure that that guy, the Ultimator, knows about him. And it seems like he's just providing a lot of data, and these are actually, pretty good sized purchases. So I'm glad that you mentioned that. And thank you also for mentioning the graphs. So there are more graphs, and it was really Lawson DT that him and I had worked on some graphs together, and he has a lot of really cool graphs, and he's been a little bit busy lately, but I did want to at least get one out and not hijack his work without giving him credit. So he was the one that had really created some great graphs. And the one that you see here is just one that I created, but he had really gone through and done all kinds of graphs, the recurring. It's also if you do a deposit, if you do a purchase and do a sale from the same account, and had all the fees, and he had multiple graphs. So, not only did it have, you know, the percentage going down, but it had the dollar amount, you know, going up. And so so we should be able to follow up whenever he's less busy, you know, with a handful of graphs that kind of break down all the costs. And, you know, one thing, now that I'm thinking about it, those graphs were really just an easy workaround for what we really, really, really wanted to do. And that was on DRS GME, is that we were going to create a like a formula where you put an input. You know, you could put input GameStop's price, you could input your buy, and then, you know, you could put recurring or one time, and then it would spit out your fee. And so, you know, rather than hold back the information, we just kind of went the graph route. But I think that that's something that I would love to have long term, just so people can do that, because you are definitely right. The fees for getting out, you know, with are very high. You know, if people are going to be selling one day, you know, in the tens of thousands of dollars of stock or whatever, you know, you're talking hundreds or thousands of dollars in selling fees. So I do appreciate you mentioning that. I did have one question for you. I know that you had some problems with trying to exit your plans. And I know you had a bunch of plans set up, and a lot of them, you know, I think that it's a little misleading on ComputerShares' website where they say that you can do something at any time, because, you know, when you have a transaction or purchase going through, you can't get out of the plan, you know, and so you can't do it at any time. And I know that you did have, it was at least a couple issuers where you had some, where you couldn't get out. Did you ever get an update on that?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. You know, you're so smart, bro, because there's probably only very few people that know that you can't, like, just smash the buy button day after day after day on one account, right? You would have to have multiple accounts. And so that guy did go through some hoops. I want to say his name again, because the guy's a fucking ape legend, right? He, like, this guy gives so – I've never seen – like, this guy gives more to the community than anybody I've seen. WTF, WRF, DW. And also, yeah, hats off to Lawson. So to answer your question, by the way, I just want to give props to, like, these guys, right? Because these guys do fucking amazing work. To answer your question, yeah, so there was, like, four stocks that I got stuck in a loop, in a vicious loop, because, like, by the time the, as you said, it's T plus three, then it takes two more days after that to settle, and then you have to have a 10-day window to close the position, and blah, 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 right? So I was able to, like, pretty much call and cancel or just stop, like, any of the auto payments of, like, 30 stocks, but four of them I couldn't stop no matter what I did. And so I ended up telling my bank to, like, don't let the charge go through, and I was interested to see what would happen if they would force sell stocks to recover a fee, because they, you know, I get a fee, they get a fee, everyone gets a fee in the situation. Even though they couldn't turn it off, I can't turn it off, you know. And I'll have to look up the names to post it back to this thread. But anyway, so the bank does a stop payment. They end up selling stock. They sell stock of that security specifically. They don't, like, dip into other securities to cover a $35 fee. And then now I can't do transactions. And I actually, like, you know, called them, talked to them, said, okay, I try to do more GME buys and some other company buys. And I really, like, had to add my account, my bank account. I told my bank, let the charges go through. And then the dates passed and, like, the bill never came. So now I'm cautious about, like, messing with it, because, you know, I have a lot of GME shares, DRS. And so I don't want them to, like, kick me from the platform or something for being either A, outspoken, or B, like, fucking around with all these different loopholes and processes. You know what I mean?
Well, thank you. So you did end up getting out of those last four, but it was because you had called your bank and then you were expecting fees and then didn't get the fees, as far as you're aware?
So I don't think I got fees on my end from my bank, but they incurred fees, and then they sold stock on my behalf to recover those fees. And then the stock that they sold wasn't enough to cover the additional $25 fee, which then they waived, you know? So it's funny that you brought, you know, we talk about that $25 on the way out. You know, again, a lot of people, they try to sell $100 stock or $200 stock. They need a little money. And then it's like, dude, you're giving 10% away. And I hate seeing people lose like unnecessarily by just not thinking through it. You know, save up the money in your bank before you hit buy. And that way you're not paying, you know, as you said, 10, 15, 20% on the fucking buy. You're paying 1 or 2% and then it's worth it.
Right. Oh, that's interesting. So, I guess what I'm taking from that is that once you hit zero, they had taken all they could take, and then that was it.
Actually, no. So I don't remember what this. I think one of them was Johnson & Johnson and a couple of them. So it was like a big name, by the way, was one of these. And I'm pretty sure it was Johnson & Johnson. I'd have to double check that. But I had like, I don't know, 60 shares or 100 shares. So I had enough to cover the 35 and the 25. But they sold just enough to cover the 35, and then they just waived the 25. So I was a little taken back by that too, and I was just like, "What, you know, what the fuck is like your guys' policies and systems? You know, can't you just waive the 35 then? What the hell's going on around here? You know, and you never get a rep in the United States. So it's the craziest thing, dude. But again, I just try to be.
I know that you had told me the four issuers before, but it might be worth looking into that just out of my curiosity, because you know some of the issuers. They sell from like a shelf reserve, you know, that the shares don't actually come from the open market. And so whenever you sell shares, they actually pull them back into their shelf reserve, the way I understand it. And so depending on what their plan looks like, that could be just kind of thinking out loud, maybe why you would have been stuck in a different situation than you would be with like all the other ones.
I'll find the names and I'll republish them here to this chat, and then I'll also DM you them if I haven't already.
Okay, sounds great, man.
Yeah, great talk, Thomas. What was it you wanted to ask?
All right, guys. Thanks for having me up, and I appreciate all the. Just great information you share about ComputerShare. I think you're the most knowledgeable people on the subject, and I really appreciate the Heatlamp TD 6 days. So I wanted to ask, like, do you think ComputerShare's business model includes share lending?
You know, that's a great question. My opinion would be when you say ComputerShare, you also, you know, they have subsidiaries. And so I think sometimes what the nominee can do is different than what the ComputerShare entity can do. And so when ComputerShare says ComputerShare does not do this, or ComputerShare as a transfer agent can or cannot do this, I think that it leaves language open to other entities like the nominee. And so the fact that they get so specific on some of their language to me makes me a little suspicious, I would say. You know, if you look at just if you kind of go through their the FAQ page and just read each question and just really say, what are they leaving out? And, you know, if you go through and it says, you know, our shares at ComputerShare insured. I don't know if you've read that one, but it's like
yes.
9 sentences long and it's still very unclear.
Very vague.
Very vague. And so, you know, in that situation, you know, are the shares insured? And it's, of course, if they're in your name, you don't need insurance, right? But, well, what if they're in the nominee name? You know, they really don't discuss, there's really a lot of, I would say, loose language. And when there's loose language, I've come to believe that it leaves the door open. So as we had talked earlier about, you know, what Chives was saying about, you know, if the shares hit the lit market or not, the terminology in the direct stock plan leaves the door open that it does not have to hit the lit market. But it does, that's great. You know, they said that it does, but the language that they have leaves it open that they couldn't. And so, you know, everything that I've read, ComputerShare the whatever you want to call it, Computer Share Limited, Computer Share Trust, CONA, whatever, they've been very clear, cannot and does not lend securities. And so now what the nominee does or what the bank does, I think that they say our broker dealer is not authorized to lend shares, you know, would be, does that mean they can't? Does that mean it's impossible? You know, does that mean they could? And, you know, I think there's a lot of loose language. So I don't want to accuse them of anything that I can't prove. But I do believe that their language is not airtight.
Yeah, that's what kind of worried me about ComputerShare. Like, just the stuff about the FAQs. I mean, you remember that it was changed at various points when we were sort of, or when you particularly were discovering the heat lamp, I guess, you know, issues with the heat lamp DD. And I mean, it, you know, you're finding out that this stuff is going on. Yeah, so you think they might be just delegating that responsibility to a wholly owned entity that could, I suppose, be lending on their behalf. So the legal language allows them to sort of obfuscate that. But it's very interesting. Like, I mean, how else would they be making money? I guess just from the fees.
Yeah. So I wanted to answer that. What's up, Thomas? I seen hey. You around different spaces, brother.
Yeah, man.
And I thought you had a great question. It was a very difficult question to answer. As 60 said, like, you know, none of us know, right? None of us know for sure. But you look at the loose language. And then one of the things I think about when I hear this question is like, well, what's game theory, right? And Chives, I know you're a great host, brother. If you could do me a favor. ComputerShare is actually a publicly traded company. And so they actually publish like a prospectus of like what it is that they intend to do, how they make money, what their revenue streams are, what their profits are. Like, they got to publish all of this stuff, right? And so there's an online... again, you just go to their website. If you could pull that for me, if you just Googled it, Chives, I'm on mobile. If you could publish that to the Nest or whatever, but the prospectus from ComputerShare, and if you ask yourself from a game theory perspective and you're a business owner, you know, what would you do? And if the language says you can't do it, as you said, well, maybe there's a subsidy. And, you know, I, if I'm not correct, but there's obviously a portion of shares that are sitting in plan that are held for liquidity purposes that below, you know, are like blended across the lines of the DTCC and DRS and whatever. And again, I might be misspeaking here, so guys, clean me up. But, you know, who's in control of those shares and who's holding those shares and what are they doing with those shares at that time? I think that's something we all kind of ask. We all wonder. I just look at it from game theory, though. It's like, you know, if you can make money, let's make money, you know? What would you do? You know,
it's kind of irresistible, right? If you're running ComputerShare and everybody else in the game is making a, like, you know, money hand over fist, lending shares. I mean, I think it's like 80% of Goldman Sachs money comes from the stock lending desk. So it's, and you know, it's the same with every other bank. So, I mean, it's just, if you're part of the Ponzi, you're making money.
You know, but, another one.
Yeah.
Sorry. Go ahead.
No, sorry. Well, I guess I was finished, but I get, you know, I'm very similar to you in terms of just thinking about it in terms of game theory, that, you know, like, yeah, and the type of, like 6 days mentioned, that the language is can be vague enough to leave an opening for such things. And when I was really shocked when the heat lamp theory came out and it was basically telling us that there were some shares being lent, you know, in my opinion, that's what it seemed to be getting at as well. So yeah, like I just worry, you know, like, because ComputerShare, I want my shares DRS, all my shares are DRS and books. But you know, it's crazy to me that, like, it seems like that would be the sole purpose of ComputerShare, like, of just pure ownership. But that they kind of lean into the stock, direct stock purchase and that kind of thing, where it leaves a lot of room for fuckery. And you know, I don't know, like I'm seeing just stuff from just, I guess, Sears, like removed their shares from ComputerShare. Now, this is just because they're issuing new shares, but they moved them to a unit investment trust. and we got no notification from Computershare. And when shareholders went and spoke with Computershare and asked where our shares went, they said that M3 took them, as in, like, it was, it seems almost contested that, you know, like, it seemed that Computershare was mad that the shares left, and that M3, like, Partners, who is a, they're like a boutique kind of restructuring company that, you know, that helps with, you know, bankruptcies and that kind of thing, and they also manage unit investment trusts, but it seemed that there was, they had, like, M3 had more, I guess, control of the shares and just had them removed from Computershare. And Computershare seemed to, I mean, they were almost hinting that they were stolen from Computershare in a weird way. So it just seems kind of, it makes me wonder about Computershare. Not like, you know, I think it's a great service to be able to have your shares booked and DRS. But, you know, it's the share lending stuff and the kind of vagueness about it that makes me just slightly worried. Like, just in the fact that I wonder how much of the entire system is compromised, including, you know, your transfer agent, really. So I guess that it's just my, just thinking about it.
That's a wild story, bro. I wasn't familiar with Sears like that. You know, it's just Sears, right?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, so I wasn't familiar with Sears like that. And I would say, you know, my guess is that it would be up to, like, the company, right? Because I'll tell you this, like, I've gotten, like, I'm registered with Coca-Cola, for example, and they've sent me, like, surveys and just different shit that no other company has ever sent me. So I would assume that, like, the, you know, that the company, maybe this M3, like, and again, I don't know anything, but had bought it and, like, you know, somehow was like, okay, well, we're the issue, you know, we're the people now, so we're fucking taking this shit and we're out of here. And then, you know, whatever happens, happens. I don't know enough about it, but I'm just thinking in my mind, like, I don't know if it's Computershare, but you bring up a very interesting point, which is, what if the issuers or the people or the companies can just basically do whatever they want? You know, what's, where is that extra layer of protection or XYZ? One thing I wanted to just touch on real quickly is we went back to the fees and we talked about, you know, how does Computershare make money? And one of the things I talk about, you said, you brought up a very interesting point, very fire point, which was Goldman Sachs makes a ton of their money from actually share lending. I think that's a very important point, like, highlight that in the book, right? That was fire. But, you know, one thing I think about too is, you know, who else makes a lot of money is the payment for order flow industry. And as we had discussed and Ultimator points out and we have been digging on, and we didn't know this, and maybe it is public information, maybe it isn't, who knows? But, like, it seems like these reoccurring buys happen at a very specific time. At the same time, every week, every month, every year, whatever it is, right? It seems like it's actually predictable. And whether that information is you know, value to people, it seems like it would be to me. So I think that's an interesting point too. How as a company, how would they monetize that situation and what would they do? And I was looking to monetize it myself, but, you know, I ended up putting that toy back down.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, I remember when it was discovered that they were likely, I mean, Wall Street was easily playing the reoccurring buys from Computershare. I mean, they knew when they were coming in and they could play it up and down, which I found that fascinating. I mean, well, to me, it was almost in coordination with the misinformation being spread on Superstock to keep people in direct stock in order for all the nefarious players to play that, you know, very predictable recurring buy that you'd see. Yeah, so, like, it just seems... yeah, it's just there's fuckery up and down the chain, and you know, when you're trying to escape it, it's so difficult, right? And about, yeah, M3 Partners would have been designated by the company to withdraw the shares from Computershare. Now, it's a different scenario just because the company itself is reemerging from Chapter 11, so you have sort of trusts involved, that kind of thing. So maybe it's just the done thing, but I just found it interesting. And I wonder, because the CEO owns 50% of the stock, so he's basically trying to ring fence the shares on like the throughout the entire journey to reemergence. And it's funny to me that he doesn't even seem to trust Computershare, you know, like, just in terms of just, like, could it be fucked with, could it be acquired, you know, that kind of thing. Like, I wonder, is there, you know, would Wall Street try to almost take over the transfer agent industry, you know, and consolidate and then have control there? You know, it's just something to think about. But yeah, I appreciate you guys' conversation and all the great information you give. And just thanks. I guess that's my, I've already asked my question, and it was great to kick about some theories with you guys.
Yeah, certainly great to have you on. For those that are curious, just for some more information, I did at Who's the Suggestion post Computer Shares 2023 kind of company statement and prospectus there in the Nest. For anyone that does want to check that out, they talk a bit about, you know, the various aspects of their business. And just, you know, to speak broadly to the various things we've been discussing over the last few minutes, you know, first on the, I guess, kind of on the subject of the, you mentioned, you know, Wall Street and their influence over the transfer agent space. One thing that I think is interesting to remember is that it's already a fairly top heavy, somewhat monopolized industry. Up until just a couple of years ago, there were only, you know, five transfer agents responsible for providing transfers and services to 80%+ of public companies. And then Equiniti and AST were both acquired by the same larger firm. So, and those were two of the top five transfer agents. So now there's a top four. And that consolidation, I mean, tale as old as time, I suppose, when it comes to capitalism, that you see major consolidation at the top. And what happens then is you've got more and more power and fewer hands. And ComputerShare, you know, has been for many decades the market leader in that space, and certainly an innovator. This concept of a direct stock plan where it's neither administered or sponsored by the issuer whose stock the plan is referring to, you know, that is practically an invention of theirs just from the last 10 years. The plans did not usually operate like that. If you read about direct stock plans on the SEC's website, for example, they mostly talk about those kind of special issuance bulk that Six Days was talking about earlier. That was a more traditional structure for a very long time. And so there's certainly some interesting innovations that are going on there. And clearly ComputerShare feels that it's worth their while as a for-profit business to encourage folks to use these sorts of, you know, perhaps more convenient options. As far as, I just want to lastly also mention, just on the broader concern about, you know, the possibility of lending, wiggly language and all this sort of thing. For me, it all comes down to ownership, right? I just want to own the stuff that I'm invested with. And I do not want to be listed as in a subclass. I don't want to hold with a nominee. I'm not interested. For me, it doesn't even have anything to do with whether or not ComputerShare is a trustworthy company. I mean, you know, that's not relevant to the conversation. I do not want there to be other entities in the chain of ownership for my investments. Full stop. Doesn't matter if they're Mother Teresa. I'm not interested. So that's just where I'm coming from with it. I think ownership is the most important factor. And so, you know, individual concerns or you know, of course, I want to find out the truth. I want to keep researching and I want to understand the system better. And that's what our goal is through resources over at ydrs.org. But ultimately, it's about that ownership. It's about getting there and the stepping stones along the way. We're leaving them all behind anyway, right, in the pursuit of ownership. So that's what I wanted to say about that.
I absolutely agree that, you know, I feel shielded ultimately just knowing that at the baseline, like, I'm the true owner of my shares. So, yeah, like, I agree, like, whatever happens in the macroeconomic space, consolidation, whatever you want, you know, once you dig deep enough and truly know that you own your shares, I think it's very hard to be fucked with after that, like, regardless of who's the, you know, technically the custodian. So, yeah, I would agree. I guess, yeah, it was just really trying to, you know, consider the sort of business model, like, what are the incentives, you know, and, but I have, you know, I'm totally with you on that. You know, I'm all for ownership, and, you know, that's what's going to take us to where we need to go in terms of just your direct relationship with the company and that kind of thing. So yeah, I appreciate you, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Looks like we've got, Bake
asking to come to speak, so I'll invite him up. Bake, any question that you have, you know, feel free.
Yeah, no, I was just responding to Sears. Like, even if some other entity were to purchase ComputerShare, that would not absolve them of their responsibilities, right? Like, the infrastructure would still exist as is. So I was just kind of curious what you were referring to in regards to somebody else acquiring them, right? Because I was thinking it wouldn't change anything, right?
Well, it could make it more difficult for companies, for example, in Sears' case, to retrieve the shares from out of the transfer agent.
No. I meant Sears the person, you, not Sears the company.
I know what you meant, but like I'm saying that, you know, if there was an acquirer, you know, there's enough vagueness in the rules that could, you know, it could lead to certain difficulties for actual, you know, getting in the way. It could possibly get in the way of companies, you know, retrieving units from, you know, and putting them in trust and then distributing them again. You know, we all know how it works, is that, you know, things consolidate, power, you know, more power is exerted and less shareholder rights are sort of whittled away. So, you know, I guess, yeah, I'm just saying that, I'm worried about consolidation. I think it's a worthwhile point. And although the sort of pure ownership is like sacrosanct, you know, you're not really going to fuck with me there. But, you know, it seemed from ComputerShare's perspective, when Sears withdrew their units or their shares into a unit trust, ComputerShare seemed to be bothered by that. And that's what kind of put me off. And then I guess I was just tying that with the sort of incentives that you'd get from ComputerShare in terms of share lending, you know, how would you make your money and that kind of thing. So I was just interested in the incentives, you know.
I'm not familiar, just to preface, I'm not familiar with what happened with Sears. I think Bake's point, if correct me if I'm wrong, is just that a company could leave one transfer agent and go to another, and that's not going to affect the ownership breakdown on the issuer ledger that the transfer agents are contracted to, you know, to maintain.
Or if ComputerShare was acquired by somebody. Yeah.
Yeah, either way, that would be true. But then I think maybe what you're saying is Sears left them and Computer was upset about that. I mean, look, they lost a client. You know, it makes sense to be a little miffed, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, they were basically telling us that Sears, Sears chosen sort of partner in terms of like the restructuring and overseeing the trust basically stole the shares from ComputerShare. I mean, that's what they were telling us. It was strange to hear that language from
That is decided on by the board, though, right? So like, wouldn't
exactly. No, it's perfectly legal. It was just kind of bizarre to me that ComputerShare seemed mad. You know, it was just
I do want to mention one thing. I believe when a company changes transfer agents, that the plan shares titled to the nominee will change ownership to the new transfer agent's nominee.
Assuming they have a nominee, right? Not every transfer agent is built to provide that service. That's a great question. I wonder what happens in the cases. I wonder if there's a...
Yeah, I mean, decision. I know... I did want to mention earlier that 9 of the 10 biggest banks in the U.S. use ComputerShare as a transfer agent. And I believe it was October of last year, BNY Mellon had changed to ComputerShare. And so I'd kind of looked into it a little bit. They were with Equiniti or AST, I believe, and they did have an investment plan with Equiniti or AST. And then when they moved to ComputerShare, they also have a plan. I can't remember if it's direct stock plan or not, or if it's a CIP. When companies change transfer agents, it seems to be very hush hush. It does not make news. And the only way that I know about it is because I had some, and then you get a notice. And I know that the whole market has done really well in the last 3 months. And so this could just be, you know, coincidence. But after they had changed, you know, to computer share, the stock is up about 30%, you know, over 3 months. But that's actually, you know, pretty close to some of the market in general. But that's something that I'm really trying to keep an eye on, because if you try to just Google, you know, let's just say company changes transfer agents or anything like that, all the information on Google is just not there. It's just, you would really need to name this specific company. And so I believe if they're, hypothetically, if a nominee was doing something with shares and they changed transfer agents and the shares had to change ownership to the new transfer agent's nominee, that could cause some liquidity problems for the old nominee in a hypothetical world.
Is there any substantive difference between the transfer agents aside from a potential fee schedule, right? Like the ways in which they function and everything, it's all the same.
I mean, I can only speak from, you know, an investor, but and this is one thing, a lot of people think I'm super critical of ComputerShare, but their user interface is 10 times better, you know, than, you know, AST, or I guess it's just EQ now, or Broadridge interface. It's just, you know, I mean, what they're doing from an investor perspective is just so much easier to use. So from that regard, personally, I actually like to buy stocks that use ComputerShare, you know, because the accounts are all linked and, you know, I kind of know how it works and all that. But one thing a lot of people don't know, and I'd reached out to them, EQ, they no longer will link accounts. And so if you have, let's say, 10 different stocks over there, you have to have 10 different logins. And so I had asked them about that, and they said it's for security. And then I asked them, well, if that's for security, it means there's some risk that I was taking on, you know, could you clarify the risk? So I'm kind of waiting to hear back from that. But my opinion is maybe if they do have insurance, that their, you know, their insurance is less because, you know, accounts are now more segregated or something like that. I don't know.
Gotcha. And then I guess my last question would be, is there any way for a company to discontinue a DSP? And then the other thing is that, you know, I was looking on ComputerShare, and it seems like if ComputerShare is your transfer agent, you are almost obligated to have a DSPP, right? Like they have to offer it as long as the company is utilizing it.
No, ComputerShare has a lot. I have a lot of accounts that don't have any sort of plan at all.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think I've registered or I've looked at a few that didn't offer it. And some of them, like earlier in the call, 6 days had mentioned, like everyone does the 1st and the 15th or twice a month. And it's like, sometimes they do once a month, sometimes they do the 25th, the 10th, the 17th. They do weird, the third Wednesday. Like they do different, each issuer kind of picks that. It's kind of weird.
Well,
yeah, I think it's direct stock plan.
Yeah.
Direct stock plan, which I think is like maybe 200 or 300 issuers that I know of. It's all the 1st and 15th. And then everybody else, if you have a customized plan, they call it a CIP, which stands for a ComputerShare investment plan. And then you can get a little more creative with it. And I think, let's say it's Disney, maybe they do once a month and it comes out on the 22nd of every month. There are a handful, Whose House and I have some of the same stocks, you know, whether it was Coke or, you know, some of the bigger ones have really...
Home Depot.
And then what about a potential discontinuation of a plan? Is that something that they have the possibility to do?
I believe.
Yeah, just to cut in on that, direct stock or any plan enrollment is not mandatory for ComputerShare's clients. I can't think of any right now, but I know that there are stocks that use ComputerShare as a TA that don't have any kind of plan, not even direct stock. I know I've researched it before. I can't find, but anyway, they're out there. They're just not as many. And, we have seen, that companies, you know, can add the plan, take away the plan. What we don't know, what I'd be really curious about is the contract lengths. You know, maybe it's that, you know, we don't see a lot of transfer agent changes because typically they're a decade or 2 decades or whatever long in terms of contracts of service, who knows, or the same thing maybe for providing a plan before any sort of, you know, review or renewal. We're just not sure about the details about that. It's not filed through Edgar or anything. So we're kind of up in the air as far as that goes. But we have seen examples of companies that don't decide to sign up. The thing is with direct stock, ComputerShare doesn't mention this themselves, but we have found, I'll see if I can find the website in my bookmarks, but there's a ComputerShare ex-vice president that started up his own transfer agent, like advocacy website group a couple of years back. And he talks about direct stock and mentions that it does not come at any cost to the issuer. It's just a box they can check as a client, and it comes at no extra cost to them. It passes all the fee structure pays for the plan structure. So rather than a CIP, a customized plan that an issuer is going to have to contract, have built, pay to maintain, direct stock is something that ComputerShare will take care of and comes at no extra cost to the issuer, which is probably why so many of them decide to, you know, add on that part of the client services. They get told, you know, it provides access, your investors access to liquidity and, you know, dollar cost averaging, et cetera. And that's what I meant earlier when I said that ComputerShare kind of pioneered this non-sponsored, non-administered plan structure, because that's what direct stock is. It's something that ComputerShare is kind of providing on top of the issuer's distribution of stock and using their own access to the market to facilitate that.
Yo, I got a question, if anyone's willing to answer. I was wondering, were people
sorry, you're breaking up, you're like a robot.
Ah, okay, I loved you in that movie iRobot.
Yo, just real quick, were GameStop people automatically put on DSP? Because I heard a lot about that, but when I DRS'd, I was put in book.
If you DRS from a broker, then you're not enrolled in the plan. If you do a plan purchase through ComputerShare, then you are. That's all.
All right, cool, cool. And there was another thing. Do you have to, I don't know if this was nonsense or something that some nonsense I read, but do you have to log in every like 6 months or something? Is there like anything like that with ComputerShare?
They do have a thing where accounts can become inactive, but there was some blood thrown around that, like your account will be liquidated or something. That won't happen. They have to make a serious effort. They have a legal requirement to make a serious effort to contact you and find out what happened if you end up being inactive for a year.
A year. Okay.
I think it has more to do if they can't reach you. Like if they send you mail and it gets rejected and then they try to call you and your phone's disconnected. I believe that's when, you know, your assets would get turned over to the state, is when they don't have any contact information for you.
Yeah, and then that'll vary based by the state, but most states they'll hold on to stuff for decades and you just need to claim it. I've lived in a couple of states and the ones that I've checked, it's literally decades they'll hold on to it and you just need to contact them. But if you log in once a year and update your phone number or whatever, then you're not going to need to worry about that.
Okay, cool. Appreciate that. And just one more thing. I don't know if this was just some crazy speculation or if any of it turned out to be true, but I remember being on Superstock and reading about Ken Griffin meeting some ex-ComputerShare person, in some remote location where he landed his plane. I don't know if you ever heard about that one, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on it.
I don't know enough from that anecdote. I don't know.
Yeah,
I hadn't heard that, but I do know that the one guy in our Discord is keeps track of the planes. I don't, you know, that would be maybe someone.
Oh, I like that guy. The hound guy. Yeah, he's cool. I remember him. But you know, yeah, that was one of the things. It was apparently it was like Ken Griffin meeting like somebody who was like a pretty high up in ComputerShare on some runway somewhere or whatever. But I don't know if it was all just nonsense. It could have been FUD, you know, the amount of shit that came out of Superstock, you know, it's hard to corroborate. But appreciate your answer. I would have liked to hear maybe if you'd heard of it or not. But who knows what it's for? Maybe Kenny's like, how do I fuck with ComputerShare? Like, but I'm sure I don't know if you can really, but I appreciate your answer.
I did have one mention that I wanted to mention is that, in my opinion, the Icons IEP uses ComputerShare as a transfer agent. They do not have a plan, but they do offer dividend reinvestment. But if you get a cash dividend, it's either cash or you get whole shares. So in my opinion, it kind of, it's like the best of all the worlds, which is that, you know, all the shares are titled to the investor. But at the same time, you can get dividend reinvestment. But then it also does not create fractionals. So I always like to mention that because in my opinion, that would be my ideal world.
Just a heads up to folks, I did go ahead and find that article I just mentioned about the ex ComputerShare VP created site talking about when direct stock was first launching. It's a quick read, interesting little pros and cons list about the plan structure. So if you're curious about that, check it out.
Man, I do want to mention guys like him. I don't think I email all kinds of people. I'm not afraid, as Chives knows, for someone to just say, who is this guy? But I've emailed most everybody, and I believe not a lot of people have paid attention to the transfer agent industry. And the people that work in the consulting type industry that can be a little more open with answering your questions have been just so nice. And I think that they're surprised that someone's interested. And even to back that up, John Wooten from Block Transfer, I don't know if you guys know him, but he has created a transfer agent that works on blockchain. And when he bumped into us, it was like, it was just like two people that had just so much in common. Not two people, two groups of people that just, you know, we could talk and talk and talk. And so I do want to encourage you guys, if you have, you know, not to be scared to just reach out to people, because a lot of these people, they have just such specialized knowledge that probably not even their spouse cares to listen to them about. And when you come in and you're just, you know, so supportive, and I've found that they are very embracing. So I would encourage you guys to reach out, outside of just the GameStop investor group.
Hey, you bring up a really good point, bro. And there's a Steve Jobs video on it, and I play it every once in a while. And it's, you know, if we could bring this wholesomeness for a second, which is people want to come from a place of service. People like to help. You know what I mean? So if you ask people for help, more times than not, that they'll help you, especially if they see that you're, you know, you're like trying to do the right thing and you're, you know, like not just some, you know, weirdo or something, right? But yeah, people come from a place of service, so ask.
Yeah, that's great advice. And, you know, that goes for any, just about anyone up here, too. If I got open DMs, if you ever want to talk about anything, if you're listening to this down the line, you know, release it as a podcast. Just go ahead, reach out. Love talking about ownership. It's my favorite thing.
Do you also send nudes?
Unfortunately not.
God damn it.
DM me anyway, though. Well, we've been going for a while, coming up on an hour and a half. Is there anyone else listening that had a question or anything before we start to wrap up? Well, let's see. While people are trying to find that raise hand button, I will just back up that John Wooten shout out. You know, Baker, earlier you asked about differences between transfer agents and, you know, beyond the differences of what types of services they offer.
Yeah.
You know, his block transfer project is pretty unique and really interesting. They're already gone through the SEC approval process. He's at the part where it's possible for private clients, publicly traded people who are seeking to IPO or switch transfer agents can reach out to him if they're interested in that idea of an issuer ledger being tracked on a blockchain. They use the Stellar Chain. It's something that, you know, Stellar, if you want to. Yeah. And it's something that if anyone's curious about, I did a great 2 or 3 hour kind of one-on-one interview with him a few months ago, going into really nitty gritty about his goals and the structure of his transfer agent and how it's different and how it's trying to embrace the distributed ledger technology that is all the rage these days and could really provide for huge jumps in transparency. So that is something I can, I'll post a link to, I guess, our like link tree, whatever. If you're curious about that, go to like Taking Stock on Spotify or Apple, whatever, and look for the one that says John Wooten. You can't miss it.
Just real quick on that. Do you mean to tell me that the shares are not pieces of paper? They're actually on the blockchain, or it's tracked like via the blockchain?
Both. You actually would have self-custody of the private key, which it correlates to your placement on the blockchain. And so it'd be as simple as, like, if you wanted to look at the density of the top 100 investors or whatever it was, or wanted a instant tally of DRS holders day to day, all of that would be public information on the blockchain for you with his system.
That's fucking sick.
Oh, it's incredible. It is incredible. So definitely encourage folks to check him out. He's doing incredible work, and I'm excited about a future where, I mean, right now he's the only one doing something quite like that and doesn't have any publicly traded clients yet. People, according to him, are a bit, hesitant to embrace this kind of new management system, which is pretty much unproven. But he has gone through the SEC approval process, and it's a matter of time until someone takes that plunge and we start to see what happens.
We just need to get him some clients.
Yeah.
it just takes a few, you know, it's kind of like DRS disclosures. You know, we've got two issuers right now. If we get 3, 4, 5, eventually other issuers are going to realize it's the cool thing to do.
That's right.
And so hopefully the same thing goes for John Wooten, where, a few clients get on and just have, a great experience. And then, it'll kind of snowball from there. But we got to get him a couple clients.
Yeah, we'll have to see how that goes. You know, I'm certainly interested in the transparency that would bring more than anything. So not sponsored, but I am a fan of the project. I did bring up MJL. You had your request there. Did you have a question? Oh, I thought I did, but it says listener. Maybe I didn't.
I got a question. Does the DTCC keep track of shares that leave them and go to the transfer agents?
Yeah, definitely. They would have the ability to. They've got complete granular knowledge of, the amount of shares leaving CD & Co.
Interesting, right? Yeah. So is that from the transfer agent communicating with the DTCC or the DTC? And or does the DTC just have oversight of the transfer agent's books?
Well, they don't have oversight of the books, but remember that DRS is a DTC service. It kind of operates in a double blind where the broker and the transfer agent are both going to be, passing information back and forth about, the associated personal information associated with the ownership. And then the broker is going to send a request through to the DTC. And then the DTC is going to, debit those amount of shares from that membership within their internal ledger. And then they're going to instruct the transfer agent to debit on their ledger CD's listing and add it to a new listing under the name of that investor. So in a nutshell, that's how DRS works.
Awesome. Appreciate it, Mark. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
You bet. MJL, go for it.
Hey, appreciate it. I actually missed the whole first hour, so I'm going to give it a listen back, and I'll be just really brief. What was the name of the individual that you're talking about that was doing kind of like the blockchain side? Is that the Content Assets computer share, or is there a different connection for that?
I can post a link to
Or just give it to me if you don't want to.
Are you talking about the transfer agent block transfer that we were just discussing?
Yep, literally just.
Yeah, I didn't post a link to that as of yet, but I can for you.
Cool.
I think he was just looking for the name.
Okay, yeah, the name of the company is Block Transfer. The guy is John Wooten. I think their website is blocktransfer.org or .com.
Yep, great. Thank you so much. I'm doing the kind of shareholder share count survey for Bed Bath & Beyond right now. And the last like week, I've really been – it seems really obvious that you could kind of just do that double-blind system and it could be encrypted and it could even function like a DAO in terms of proxy voting and just kind of like how any type of decisions would get made. But, yeah, it'd also be obviously transparency to the – you know, the holding and who was retail, who wasn't and whatnot. But anyways, I'll give it a listen back. I'm sure there's a lot of really good info. So thanks for recording it. I appreciate it.
Yeah, sure thing. And hey, good luck with that, community share audit. I love the kind of work that guys like you are doing too.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I'll drop the most recent one that was just from yesterday in the bubble. Yeah, I appreciate the links because I'm going to look into it tomorrow. Thank you.
It is interesting to think about block transfer and, like, if you were to sell, do those blockchain shares then revert to the DTC system and not blockchain?
That, let's see. I mean, I'm going a bit from, because this was a while ago, I asked a similar question. I believe essentially that CD and Co would have their own wallet, and so there's some kind of ability that the reason they use Stellar, and now I'm getting into the area where I'm a bit fuzzy, so I'd encourage you to go listen to that talk to get his take on it. But TLDR, there's like the reason they use Stellar was there's a type of settlement layer thing to it where it's not as if you'd have the self custody of the wallet, but you wouldn't necessarily be able to just like hand it off to someone else because the transfer agent does have a requirement to track various personal information for the account. Then that wouldn't be on chain. Stuff like your name and address would not be public. But there's kind of like a graduated permission system.
Like a ZK. Yeah.
A little bit like that. Yeah.
But it's not true cold storage.
Right. Well, you've got control over it, so no one can like they're not able to forcibly disperse, but you would need to, you're not also at the same time able to freely transact without giving them a heads up and that kind of thing. So it's a little column A, little column B, as I understand it.
Dude,
but again, I definitely encourage folks to read their white paper or check out John himself.
Yeah, I'm going to check it out because, I mean, like, if you're saying that it cannot be, you know, force liquidated or anything like that, you know, if let's say you owe back taxes, you know, you're saying that they can't assume control over your assets like that.
That's a great corner case. Boy, I wish I thought to ask about it at the time, but I did not. So I don't have an answer for you, but I am very curious about that now that you brought it up.
I'll take a look. I'll take a peek.
Yeah, I would recommend reaching out to John. He's pretty busy, so he's not one of those guys that gets back to you within, you know, an hour type of thing, but he'll usually get back to you within a day or two, and he he loves talking about this stuff, so I would recommend just reaching out to him directly.
Honestly, it's just interesting to learn about, you know, I'm only really familiar with AST and computer share, and it's, you know, at just thinking about it, you'd think that there would basically be a monopoly because they all do the same goddamn thing. Maybe one charges a little bit less than the other, or they provide different services. But, you know, in essence, they're all the same. And it's kind of nice to hear about innovation in the industry.
Oh, yeah, it's great to hear. And I think what he's angling for is that he's able to make a bottom line argument because so much of it is going to be on that system. You know, so many of these reports that might be quite cumbersome to run if you're using, you know, a combination of paper certificates and book entry and, you know, distributed across a variety of different, holding styles and nominees. If you can just, you know, run a quick report with some simple code on the blockchain anytime an issuer requests a report or needs to submit something for filing purposes, you can, you know, offer them a much lower rate for the service.
And you have a legitimate audit of people who are shorting the stock.
Well, you've got an audit of ownership at the least.
Yeah.
All right, well, great. Well, unless there's anything else, you know, I think pretty great chat today. I will go ahead and add to this nest here in a moment the a link out to their website just so folks have that conveniently. But that longer form interview as well, I think, is pretty good to listen to. And then their white paper, of course, which you can find on their website. All great stuff. And I mean, really, as it's a funny thing, right? This whole episode started talking about direct plan purchases, and that's another thing where we have to jump through so many hoops, compiling through community effort, all of these different information from bank statements, transaction numbers, piecing that together with what we're able to glean from the lit market. And if all this was tracked on blockchain publicly, there'd be no need for any of this. So just another interesting parallel between his efforts and ours, I think, in that sense.
All right. I'm making sausage and peppers. I'll catch you guys later. Thanks again.
All right. Sounds tasty. Yeah, I was looking for that link there for block transfer. Just post in that. And we'll call it there. Well, everybody have a great Wednesday. Thanks for stopping by. Much appreciated. 6 days, thanks so much for your expertise, as always. Hoos, you as well. Chad, Thomas. Chad, great to see you. I guess I didn't even say hello. But great to see you. Thanks for stopping in.
All good, man. Just here for the quote.
Thank you, guys. Please reach out if you have any information or any questions, you know, about the plan purchases. I love collaborating.
All right, terrific. You heard the man. He's got open DMs. Reach out if there's anything you think you can help with. And everyone have a great day.